Basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA banter / college ball show. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss basketball in general, whether it's NBA. At the near the end of the show, we will talk a little bit about the NCAA because, you know, they are starting to bend at the knee, so to speak. They are starting to bow down and realize their greed is starting to catch up with them. That select G League team is starting to apply pressure. So there is some updates as far as what they're willing to vote on in the future. So we'll talk a little bit of NCAA hoops a little bit later, whether it's allowing, you know, them to make money some certain way. Also, just the NCAA, we've talked about it in recent shows about the loss financially. We're going to talk a little bit about sports in general financially, whether it is the NBA, or if you look at the NCAA, if you look at college football, there's a good article about Michigan and in the Athletic. And I think it's a good article in a lot of ways because Michigan's, you know, a marquee program, and the amount of money they're going to lose if they can't pack that stadium. But we're going to start out with NBA. The NBA has got something going on here May 8th that they're going to announce certain things. They are starting to get their planning together, whether it pertains to their facility and when players across the country can start reporting to their facility. And that's a weird game too, because it all goes on what you can get, like your state opening. Also, maybe you can get some special preference as far as business opening, like Minnesota here. 2 Mondays ago, we opened up 30,000 businesses that didn't really have customers at them per se. And that brought back 80 or 100,000 people to work. This last Monday, we opened that a little bit more, and it's like curbside, kind of the one or two or three people shops, retail shops. A lot of it's curbside right now, but they are open. So we're going to kind of blend some of that in there. Disney World and Disneyland are trying to shop along with Vegas, the NBA, and some other leagues. We'll talk minorly about that. A couple of episodes ago, we did have that. Is the NBA in Las Vegas doable? You can check that out, you know, a couple weeks back. And, of course, NBA-wise, we got to talk about the last dance. We did an NFL post-draft show last week, so we skipped a week as far as basketball. But we'll talk a little bit about the Pistons and whatnot, Isaiah Thomas and whatnot, but we will cover episodes 5 and 6. It's been a phenomenal, in a lot of ways, the music, the behind the scenes stuff that we didn't get to see, interviews, like it's been really, really well done. Obviously from a journalistic, open-minded viewpoint to make sure we cover all the facts or cover all notions of something. That's been they've fallen short there, but hey, you know, it is what it is. So we're going to definitely talk a variety of stuff pertaining to basketball. Also, since we got a Golden State, huge Golden State fan, and not just when they started winning games, I can attest to that, Marshall. We're going to match up that 96 team with the Golden State 2017 squad. Once they got Durant, 2017, 2018, whatever. That back-to-back championship. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And I got to know, he's a Cowboys fan too, so I got to know what he thinks about this Dak Prescott situation with the extension. And also a surprise signing, which you're just wondering, is that trying to increase their leverage? Or, well, we'll get into it. But anyway, if this is your first time listening to the NBA banter / college ball show, welcome. It's right here. It streams live on archives on blogtalkradio.com/ropeofradio. Man, I just chopped that up. But, you know, to find this show, it's under the Rope It Up Radio podcast. You don't have to just go to Blog Talk and download it. You can find it at Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. You can use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or TuneIn to find the platform. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, football, baseball, boxing, everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or maybe you have, you're not quite happy, okay? There's something that I do myself. It's not just an ad, okay? It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. There's a seven-day free trial. You can test it out. There's no annual contracts. The plans start as low as $55 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR as well. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. However, if you're in a part of the country that, you know, just gets horrible internet, there's still plenty of places like that, especially in the rural areas. I understand. It's one thing to go to Amazon or Netflix and archive something that's just sitting there, like I said, archived, rather than a live streaming platform. They do have AT&T TV. That's the cable network, basically, foreign platform. It's a growing platform. It's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's in New York. It's in parts of Florida, parts of Texas, California, all the way up to Seattle in the Northwest, other parts of the Midwest besides Minnesota, like St. Louis. Basically, you just go to the website, Google it, go to the website, AT&T TV Now, put your area code in there, see if you got it. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now, that's live streaming cable. Okay. So, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host Marshall and just kind of see how he's doing on, you know, just another week goes by with hibernation to an extent. How you doing, buddy?
I can't complain too much. I'm finding ways to keep up the social life. Lots of texting going on. Too much texting, probably.
Texting. Which one is that? I lost
track. I think a lot of my Trump money, Chris, is going to go to like a bunch of dinner dates. I have a lot of like dates planned out once all these restaurants open up. So that $1,200 will be put to good use. Besides that, life's okay. Just keep running, keep working out. And like I told you before the show, I'm saving a lot of money. Like when I can't gamble on sports and go out and eat all the time, my bank account seems to be a lot more positive. So again, once this ends, I'm not sure if that's going to stay the same, but if I wanted to save money and get rid of my credit card debt, this whole thing has kind of helped out my budget for a little bit. But besides that, last night I actually did watch the first episode of the Jordan doc last night, and I watched the other one this morning. I know we'll get to that later, but I've truly enjoyed that. I'm not sure if maybe it's the fact that we don't have a sport fix right now, but I really think, as you said, they've done a great job on it. We got a couple of different opinions, obviously, to share, and that'll be kind of fun later. And I was actually I talked to my dad yesterday when I was at the park, and I mentioned the NCAA. And it's so weird, Chris, how a committee for literally almost probably 100 years now or so has been so against ever giving these kids money, you know. But the second any other plan comes up which would deviate from them making money, oh, you know what?
Right.
These plans aren't so bad. We can be flexible. Let's make something work. It's, you know, for so many years, the guy kind of seems like a prick, the Mark Emmert or whatever, the head of the NCAA, yeah, is like, you know, these kids go to college for an education, and they don't need to be making money. You know, you had right. The whole O'Bannon thing from UCLA, and that's why they've gotten rid of the, like, some of the best video games of all time, especially college football. I know me and millions of guys and probably some girls too in this country. Dude, call it. You got to make your own recruiting class.
I used to love the recruiting cycle. And just the names and everything.
College, I would normally get about 4 to 5 years into a franchise and start up with a new college team. I mean, the college football game, you had to get rid of that stuff because, you know, they're using names to profit. And eventually,
they'd
now
rather
that
get rid of the game and make more money in the future than be like, nah, we'll take less money, forget it.
And I'm not a huge video game person, but if that game ever comes back, I will get a console and play that, because the NCAA football was just always, it was the shit. That was one of the GOAT games of all time, up there with like Mario Kart and GoldenEye. But Huh, I hope that does come back one day, and hopefully it will soon. But yeah, so with all this being said, with money being the main buzzword, as you may say, now that this new G League has developed, we'll kind of start here and go back and forth. The NCAA is like, oh, wait, so two of the top 10 players who are supposed to be in NCAA are now going to the G League. Huh. You know, and to break it down to a simple fan who maybe is not as diehard as us, okay, not everyone's going to maybe watch every Carolina game or every Gopher game or every Big 12 Tuesday night game. But you do have tons and tons of people who love to watch March Madness, which is the cash cow for the NCAA. You know, so again, let's just say hypothetically, one of these top 10 players turns out to be a Carmelo Anthony type or a Zion Williamson or, you know, some star from college basketball. And he's not showcasing his skills to the NCAA March Madness, but instead he's just going off on G League. That's a lot of lost money, Chris. You know, man, if this guy was wearing a Kentucky shirt, think of how much, you know, sales and how much ESPN could talk about the guy. But, oh, wait, he's playing for a G League in Los Angeles where, I mean, sure, they might have their games on NBA TV. But NCAA is like, oh, man, this dude could have been making a magical run. So now that the fact that NCAA could lose money and lose some profit because God knows they don't make enough, now we're thinking, okay, maybe we should start giving these kids sponsors or money. It's interesting how the second they maybe lost a couple of pennies, they're like, you know what? We're willing to work with you, Chris. We're willing to work with you. Let's discuss possible options. It's amazing how shit that changes so quick.
Yeah, it is pretty funny how that changes. And we might as well just stay on this subject then, too, instead of going to NBA. Just to kind of catch everybody up, the Board of Governors definitely moved towards allowing the compensation for endorsements and promotions, or like think about it like Instagram accounts and sponsors. It's kind of funny though, because they talk about sponsors, but then they're like, but you can't have our logo on there. It's like, well, okay, but they could have the logo before on your own jersey, but these guys can't. So it's still kind of funky. But you know, it's still a way for them not to have to pay the money. You know, they're just allowing them True. To get sponsorship. You know what I mean? Because they're not going to lose any money. If anything, if they can keep more players in, you know, and that'll be part of the whole, if they allow 18-year-olds in again as well. I think the NBA is ready for 18-year-olds now that they have the G League a little bit more developed, especially the select team. If it works out, I think they're ready for them more than they were, you know, 5 or 10 or 20 years ago. That's for sure. But it's just still a way to be like, well, at least you get in there. And then if you're a star, then you can start making money. It's not like what we talked about, how everybody on the team has like a bank account or an escrow that they put in there and they can get out, you know, they could cash in when they're out or whatever. But yeah, this is what it talks about. Go ahead.
That's a great point, Chris, because one thing that this really doesn't help, just to look big picture for college athletes, you know, like this idea of offering sponsorships, you're looking at, you know, a star basketball player at Maryland, at Memphis, like at Carolina, at, you know, at a big school. This really kind of says, hey, those stars that we want to brag about in football, basketball, and other sports, let's make sure we take care of them. This still really doesn't do shit for the kid that, you know, plays golf at Purdue or the girl that does, you know, gymnastics at California. So, I mean, they're really still not coming all the way.
Yeah, but how much
way
do they bring in, though, to the school? Consider them, you know what I mean?
No, that's the point I want to make, you know, but again, they're not really showing all their hands. They're just trying to point out, hey, here's the kids who are our cash cows. Let's help them. You know, now realistically, I know they don't bring a ton of money, but those kids are probably struggling, you know, to eat and pay the bills like we talked about last episode, just as much as the kid that's a star point guard at Kentucky, you know. So, realistically, if you're going to look at it this way, it would kind of be nice to maybe even give them a small piece of the pie. Again, the girl at Arizona State that does gymnastics is not quite bringing in what the quarterback does, but, you know, maybe with this process happening, Chris, maybe this opens the door for potentially even being somewhat of a stipend in some way, shape, or form for all the athletes, because all of them do go through the issues. But at least now the NCAA is saying, okay, the top 1% of y'all who are the studs we'll try to help you out. But maybe 10, 15 years down the road, there becomes a little more of assistance in general. Again, it's not really, I know that it won't happen now, but kind of big picture, maybe this could open the doors for that to occur to help out college athletes just in general.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. That's true. I guess my point is, if you look at golf and gymnastics, those two ones you point out, everybody has a different upbringing, no doubt. But the average golfer that makes it on scholarship and the average gymnastic person that makes it on scholarship compared to the average football player or basketball player, I'd say it actually is different. But maybe allowing them to work in the summers to have a little extra money, you know what I mean? The food thing isn't a problem for all sports now, though, I'll say that, because they did figure that out. But let's get through some of this before we start giving our takes too much here. But, yeah, a lot of this is just to kind of get some of this stuff out of the way. They part of this stuff is going to be voted on in January 2021-22. A lot of it – oh, wait, they'll like this rule to go in effect for 21-22. And so a lot of this stuff still needs to be voted on officially. They just now – it's kind of like getting on a ballot to see if you go in the Hall of Fame. A lot of this stuff, it's not pay to play, because there is a problem with that too, because then you have the big programs. You know, if they can sit there and pay to get recruits, that's going to be an issue too, which true. I do like. There has to be some sort of straightening out there, because, yeah, that you want to see Power 5 and even – top 15, top 10 teams, programs year in and year out. You want to see like the you know, a separation even further, like we talk about in America, the rich and poor, how the middle income is getting, you know, dried up. It's even happening now even more with this economy we're about to have. But if you think about, like, that is worrisome too, you know, and that's also what the NCAA, you know, is like, well, it's not a pay-to-play system, which there has to be some of that as far as getting a player to the university can't be based off money. That's where I think a problem would be. Now, of course, if you go to Alabama, if you go to Clemson, if you go to Notre Dame, if you go to Michigan, if you go to name brand places, you're going to have more name brand promotion or sponsors, you know, sure, after you. And it's been since 1980 that the Olympics allowed some sort of sponsorship. Remember, like, you know, you had Phelps making $40 million on that Wheaties commercial, or on that Wheaties sponsorship, and that's all the really, that's the biggest thing, is like, hey, just allow them to have sponsors. That's the biggest thing, and let the chips fall where they may after that point. Ensuring student athletes are treated similar to non-athletes unless complete reasons exists with the difference in that, maintaining priorities of education and collegiate experience. Yeah, uh-huh. And, sure, and these are all the rules that they put out last week. Ensuring rules of transparency, focus, enforceable. Basically, like, you'd have to also get your sponsor cleared. They wouldn't want you, like, sponsoring Pubhorn or, you know, Pornhub. Pubhorn, I just said that differently. Pornhub, you know, like, that they would – there is some stuff you'd have to go through and get permission. And obviously there's a layer of where does that agent fall in there and help you, and how early can they sign, and all that. So there is some stipulations that play in here, but that's basically what the NCAA have now, the governors of it, the committee, the major committee of it, the main committee, I should say. They've now said that we will allow it. We gotta vote on it officially, and then you look at California. In 2 years, they do have that Ed O'Bannon, you know, that college thing. That's gonna be something that they're gonna have to address. And so that it's not like it's a done deal, but it is a step in the right direction. What were you gonna say?
Well, and I like you bring up that point, because, you know, the one of the angles to look at is, okay, you know, when do we decide? At the time of, okay, let's say made up kid named Nate Jones is going to be a point guard at Carolina, and, you know, Nate Jones is looking at a couple of different schools, and let's say Nate Jones agrees to get like an Adidas sponsor, okay, but then Nate Jones goes to play basketball at Carolina. So you now have a kid who maybe has been given the sponsorship to sport Adidas gear, and you're going to a school where people rock Jordan. So it'll be interesting for me to see kind of how they do that details of when can a kid agree to a sponsorship, and if he goes to a school that rocks Under Armour and you sign with Adidas, how does that play out? Or do you simply have to only get sponsorships from clothing gear, which would be the main push, and you can only rock out what the school wears? That's something that will be, I think, interesting, because I doubt you'd make the kids wait to decide. Who knows? But that's
one. Or you'd be in the commercial for Adidas, but then you wouldn't be. You'd have to still go with what your team goes with. You know what I mean? Yeah. So a lot of this is just you can now star in a commercial, that type of thing. I don't think that they'd be forcing you to wear a certain gear like that.
Okay.
You know, it's not like an Adidas deal for LeBron. You know, it'd be a little different, you know?
Yeah, I guess I'm just curious overall to dig into that a little bit more, because, I only say it, Chris, because just the natural first reaction and hell being a high school teacher is everyone loves nowadays is shoes. I mean, the generation of, like, teenagers right now, especially teenage boys in our country, I mean, shoes are talked about, you know, like it's almost like they're as important to your image as your cell phone. So I'm assuming that's the main angle they're going to want to look at for sponsorship. So again, you know, how will this play out with the schools? Who knows? But it'll be interesting to see kind of how they delve into that. And as you said, maybe do the commercials and then wear the different colors. But it would be kind of weird to see made up guy have an Adidas commercial and then wear the Nike shoes on Saturday. But we'll find out. We'll see. But overall, I think we're both very happy with this, because it's at least giving these kids who are making a lot of money a chance to, you know, benefit themselves more than just paying their right. University presidents.
Yeah, and a lot of it is you get on the team, then you get in the lineup, then you start your season, and then you could see if you're a star that would get promotions. Like, sure. Yeah, if you're LeBron or something, or like one of these guys like Zion, some guy that people know about before you're getting in, those guys will probably land a deal once they're at school, like officially. But it has nothing to do with, and this is kind of what they're talking about too, this article in Sporting News, like for instance, 90% of the college teams will no longer be relevant. Well, that's not necessarily true, because right now you have a similar situation anyway, where some of these smaller schools aren't going to be the same brand. Schools will form marketing departments to make deals for athletes. That is actually prohibited in what they're going to vote on. Schools will be recruit by promising the arranged appearance fees. Appearance fees will be another thing that you could show up someplace and get paid maybe in the summer or something like that. That's going to be different. Fair market value established by what a party is willing to pay, and the NCAA has no business in interfering. Sorry, no, the NCAA is fine with allowing athletes to earn what the market typically pays, but not what some overzealous booster, meaning the boosters are still going to have rules and all that. Schools in the biggest markets will have the biggest advantage. Yes and no, because actually college, especially college football, there's not many big cities in college football if you think about it.
No, at all.
And actually,
Tuscaloosa is a small town. That's literally a
you're blocking
town,
your
Chris.
Mic or something.
Oh, sorry. Like Tuscaloosa, is that better?
Okay.
Yep. Tuscaloosa is a regular. I bet it's probably population 30,000, and probably 18 or 20. You know, probably 70% of that population, wherever it is all the college kids. So that's a great point. I mean, almost every. I mean, Michigan's in Lansing. Lansing's not a huge city. Kentucky, so, the Wildcats. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that, I don't think you have to worry about that, because you're not just going to go to some, okay, you know, all right, I'm going to go to a city because of the city. It doesn't make sense. You know, that doesn't even now happen in the NBA like it used to. I mean, you could be in Oklahoma City and be a huge star. So I think it's veering away. Since we're on this topic, we were going to save the NCAA for later, but fuck it, we're here. So we might as well just finish it off. But just to kind of go off what we're talking about as far as the potential, like, loss in revenue, if you know, we talked about the NCAA. We talked about it from a college basketball perspective in March Madness and those 3 weeks that they missed out on, and the payments are way lower than they were going to be, yada, yada, yada. But when you look at, for instance, and that's where the athletic.com has this Michigan article. And right now, Michigan's going through like 12 to 20 different financial forecasts, you know, just to give them a kind of like these models for the coronavirus, you know, like give them a wide perspective of what potentially could happen and then what they're going to do and certain things that they're going to have to do. Because even folks, I mean, the people that rely, like the people, well, there are people, obviously, but like the schools that rely on college football that much, in one way, it's going to hurt them, but they also have built up money from this, and they've expanded and rebuilt in like an engineering school is bigger because of that. They have different programs that they've helped, not just the facilities, you know, for football or basketball, but the whole, you know, the technology and all that. So some of them already got a major head start, but there's also some colleges that are going to probably, that may just shut down straight up or have to take a year off because of budget in general. Now, if you're a private school and you're a successful private school, real, like as far as known, you're going to be okay because you have an endowment of like $40 billion like Harvard. But there are like small schools that aren't, that are private, may not get as much, you know, government funding. That's going to be weird too. But just to give you a level of, if college football went with no fans, you know, it's one thing even for college basketball. It's another thing, like NBA makes money off it, of course, like the teams do, the franchises do, of course, and they have 82 games. And look at baseball, that's a lot of games. They're not filling 100,000 people in the stadiums like college football or even NFL, but still, it's a lot of games. But really, the big thing is the TV money. And we talked about how splitting it up amongst more teams makes it less money. But look at this as far as college football. And what do they have, 118 or 115,000, something like that, Michigan. So football accounted for $122 million of Michigan's athletic revenue in 2018-2019. According to the documents, you know, of U.S. Department of Education, roughly $75 million of that revenue came from ticket sales and donations tied to ticket purchases. The annual payout for the Big Ten, driven by league TV contracts of the Big Ten Network, of course, as well, has been reported at $50 million. That's a lot of money tied up to college football, of course. But think about that. $75 million of the $122 is off of ticket sales. And you're getting $50 million from the big networks and your own Big Ten network. I mean, that really puts it in perspective. If they're not allowed to sell tickets like that, I mean, that's a huge, huge, huge drop in profit for this year. And you times that by how much more schools do that. There's like 10 or 13 schools, I think, now that have 100,000, you know, seat stadium. So something like college football, you know, compared to NFL not doing it, they're going to lose money, the teams, no doubt about it, about, you know, as far as the revenue. But the frickin' TV revenue is just way, way more. And just kind of put it in perspective that way. Any last words about this stuff before we got to get to the NBA and all that good stuff, too, in The Last Dance, obviously.
I would just say that from what you just said, it was going to kind of be my main point. And I know college football fans may be, like, be considered the craziest. I think that is the sport that does get hammered the hardest, you know, because you turn on SEC Saturday, it's Auburn, Alabama. They do the flyover, and you got 70,000 people shaking, like, the, you know, orange or red pom-poms, depending on where you're located, like, the draw of the fans filling up those stadiums, you know, and even, God, it seems even nowadays, probably smaller stadiums, I'm sure, like Oregon State, like a pretty trash garbage team, I'm sure they still sit 40 or they could seat up to 40 capacity of 40,000. I know Oregon on the West Coast, I mean, their stadiums, I think, over 85,000 people. So yeah, college football is definitely a sport where they have the numbers live, but as you said, they don't quite get the, it's not even close to get the money that they could get like the NFL does. So we'll see. But I mean, I was just talking to a friend of mine who actually, the one who played in the NFL, and we just don't see how there's going to be a way for it to probably happen, or at least on time. Because in college football, that's probably the sport that you have the most people on the sideline of any sport in the country. I mean, it's even more than the NFL, especially because if you're a home team, you know, the freshman practice squad dresses. I mean, you got probably you could dress up to 80 to 90 guys in a football uniform, and you have the coach and the staff. I mean, so I hope that we come up with something to, hey, here's how we feel safe doing this, to have 110 people in Auburn colors. Let's feel safe and give them, have a plan. I just think right now, Chris, sadly, that the plan to have a college football sideline full of 100 plus people is probably far away from now. But I want to be optimistic and say, hey, let's hopefully figure something out come when the leaves start falling off the trees. But
also, and don't mention that again, the shit, the leaves are just getting on the trees. Don't mention that again, okay? I live in Minnesota. Remember that shit. But you're right. And I think they'd have to limit, like they probably limit the travel, you know, who the team that travels with 43 people already probably, that or 48 or something like that. But even like home games, they'd have to tweak that. But like, I could see it maybe starting on time, but man, it's going to be tough to have anybody in the stands. And real quick, I forgot to mention this. Tell me if this surprises you at all. So the NCAA had they literally had a rainy day fund chilling, right? Just in case, just in case a tournament got canceled for some reason. Okay. They had it. They had one. Okay. And it says, where is it? So they had $500 million. But according to the internet, they actually ended up, so they had it. They had a rainy day fund in 2015. They decided to spend it. They ended up spending it. But the way they did it was pretty nuts. But it says, according to interviews with several former NCAA employees, the organization was much better prepared for a cancellation tournament several years ago when it built up a savings of nearly $500 million to help, you know, just in case. Then in 2015, the NCAA leadership decided to spend more than $400 million of those savings without increasing the NCAA's insurance coverage following any kind of, you know, this type of event. And I mean, talk about a managerial error, dude. Does that really surprise you at all that the NCAA had $500 million just chilling for a rainy day and decided to say, you know what, let's spend it on something else and let's not help out our insurance either so we can recoup? Does that surprise you at all?
No. God knows what the hell that money was spent on. That doesn't surprise me at all. I'm sure that and it goes to show, hey, how did they have $500 million of a slush fund? I doubt they printed that money from the Capitol.
Right.
It's probably because, oh my God, Michigan, Oklahoma, and Texas make you a shitload of money every time they have a football game on a Saturday. So, but
definitely not surprising.
No.
NBA wise, you know, Steve Kerr the other day said, you know, he's not even planning on having Golden State come back. He feels like it could be just the top 16 teams and maybe not even that. But there is some pull with the NHL and the NBA of maybe wanting to try to close the season out regular season wise, not just to get the troops ready, right? Because they could do that through exhibition games and scrimmages and stuff like that and get everybody ready, but also because of the regional cable deals. That's a huge – the sports networks – that's a huge thing, and they have to hit a certain amount of games televised to cash all the way in. And as of right now, they're not at that number. So that plays a role in why people are even thinking about, you know, and talking about that. We've also heard, like we said, we had that breakdown of Vegas, which does make sense a whole lot. I think the most they've been throwing around that the Disney World and Disneyland. And Disney World makes a lot of sense. You have Orlando there, or you know, they say in Vegas through Mandalay, the Mandalay might actually build courts, and then they can just all have it right there. So they are still kicking around the idea, and this is not just the NBA. This is also the NHL This is also, of course, boxing and UFC and stuff like that for Vegas and whatnot. But they're still kind of messing around with, you know, where they're going to do it. But some of the biggest thing as far as the NBA goes is May 8th. And we talked about this, you know, this Friday, the NBA is going to come out and give some information. Now that you start to see Florida and other states opening up, the state athletic commissions are allowing more. There's boxing gyms and MMA gyms that are opening up, and just regular gyms and restaurants and all that. But, you know, they're trying to say, hold off now. Don't allow your players to go in the facility, because these other players in other states, even though a lot of them are probably in their states right now, wouldn't be allowed to do it. And then there's a little competition thing and all that. But some of the rules and regulations are, you know, only four players allowed in the facility at once. You can't shoot at the same hoop, you know, that type of thing. And it does make sense to the NBA once again, because you got 15 guys on your squad. So it's really not that big of a deal. The testing, you wouldn't need as much testing. But this Friday, they're going to roll out basically how their plans on how they're going to – are they going to go two-week camp and then do exhibitions and scrimmages and start? Are they going to do regular season? So there's a lot to look in that. But May 1st was kind of the first idea of a while back that we're not going to make any kind of real statement or anything like that, big major plans, and say we're ready to do it even before May 1st back then. Now it's May 8th because he wanted to delay it a little bit. Adam Silver is when I say he. But they're still, like I said, they're still messing around with the idea of playing, you know, in those facilities, which makes a lot of sense. But right now, it's all about reopening the practice facilities. I still think they could, you know, do it right there at the practice facility in one or two towns. But May 8th, that's the date that they pushed it back. And also, there's a 16-page memo with procedures, requirements. Basically, like the states are sending to businesses, too. Like, hey, basically, you got to fill this out, send it to us. We're not going to check, but you got to at least say you got a plan. And also, you know, having in the neighborhood of 15,000 tests available, so you can constantly stay on that. So there's a lot that goes with it. But it even says the NBA expanded its credit facility, an additional $650 million up to $1.2 billion to protect cash flow. And it could do that again, which makes a whole lot of sense. So there's still a lot going on, but I think that there's hopes just because of the amount of people on the court, the amount of people in an arena, the fact that they don't even have to do it in an arena. I really feel like it's pointing to that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it's getting brighter, you know?
I think the biggest fear that compares sports differently to our regular human life is just the fear of what the F do you do if you bring people back and five guys on the Lakers get the coronavirus and like one, like just like tragically passes away or something to that effect.
In general, LeBron gets the virus. Okay. Well, you're going to shut the league down again then? Like, who wants to watch that shit without LeBron, you know?
And that's the thing, you know, like this has been brought up in baseball. Maybe you expand the rosters to a bigger number. So, hey, even though like Scherzer from my Nationals is a star pitcher, if he gets sick, you got a kid from AAA, you know, but for the sports, and that's why it's different than society. You know, there's a lot of people who went out to restaurants this weekend and a lot of people were opening up businesses across the whole state and some governors who want to go gung ho about it like crazy. And you essentially can do that for just the regular person. Like I could have probably gone out to have dinner today in Mesquite or Dallas, Texas and been fine. But Silver really can't take that risk. Like I'm sure he wants to, but the fact that I forget who it was, it might have even been a press statement by Fauci like a month ago, it seems now, but that was his point was, are we going to see sports back before there is a vaccine? And I think the subtitle of that, Chris, was for, will there be fans back at sporting events before there's a vaccine? But I think Silver has that tough line of, okay, here's our rough plan. We're going to go to Vegas. We're going to play in the Disney World. Here's what we want to do. But again, let's say we make it to the playoffs. And again, for example, the Lakers and LeBron get sick. Okay. Are they allowed to bring up players? Are they eliminated due to the fact that they only have, you know, a 7-man roster? And that's a really tough question because there's not a perfect freaking answer for that. Silver's never plan on having this debate or discussion in his head, but I think that's maybe just the one fear negative factor. And again, it's not the coronavirus death is not affecting many people who are athletes and in good shape, but that doesn't mean it couldn't happen. You know, I know that Tony Baselli, like the former Jags offensive lineman, I mean, seems to be a pretty big built dude, you know, and he said that thing knocked him on his butt. And he was in bed for a week, you know, so it could happen to athletes, you know, so I think that's the only fear. Now, obviously, I want there to be basketball back. I think they will have the projected plan. I just think that if people ask him the questions I'm presenting, I don't think he'll have an answer. And he's probably just going to have to cross his fingers and hope, guys, we're going to Vegas in June 28th. We're going to give you a couple weeks warm up and let's just knock on wood, you know, and maybe he will actually have a plan for,
yeah.
Hey, if this team gets sick, what do we do? I just don't realistically, Chris, see in a sport that is so massively competitive. And I mean, these guys want to win and obviously everyone wants the trophy still. I don't see what the plan could be for it. Cause again, you're not quite as full of a roster like you are for a baseball team. And just to kind of have this little side to side, if you bring up a triple A baseball kid, there's not a massive drop off to the team. Cause that's one person that could be a relief pitcher or a shortstop. Mm-hmm. If you lose LeBron and Anthony Davis both get sick, bringing up a kid from your G League, I mean, that's like a Madden drop off of 30 points. So I love the ideas. I hope to hear good news like you on Friday.
It's like a negative thing, actually. Negative points. Can you do that?
That's just my one fear of what is the plan if shit happens, people get sick. And I think though, on a positive note, and maybe a little minorly ignorant, is the fact that you're just gonna have to say, you know what, let's just risk it and hope that people don't get sick. And you know what? Okay, if LeBron does get sick or Ben Simmons gets, you know, whoever, like, okay, let's quarantine them. Hopefully the team didn't get it and spread it, and we have to move on. Because you can't live in the fear of we can't have basketball for another year, you know, until there's a vaccine or something like that. But from the fan perspective, that's kind of just, you know, might have to kick rocks for a little bit. But yeah, I love the news. I'm hoping he has a good plan. And let me ask you this question to kind of wrap up my point for this. I bet there are a lot of guys who have been working out and maybe have a trainer that, you know, they do FaceTime videos with, or maybe the trainer actually goes to their house and they go work out in the park. Mm-hmm. It will be interesting because there's a lot of people, like, I've been lucky. For me, I've been running and, like, I've gotten in really good shape. But there's also people who have not. There's got to be a percentage of athletes who have used this time just to kick back and chill. So it would be interesting to see what the plan is for time to get back in shape. Cause that would vary a lot for different people, Chris. And also I'm kind of curious to see what the plan would be for how much time you can use to get back. Cause a lot of guys, obviously when the season was over, you're in peak pop condition shape, but you've been chilling at home now with the wife and kids for 2 months and eating a lot of food, and you don't have the workout facilities you do at the Brooklyn Nets system. How long is it going to take, you know, just random point guard to get back in game shape? That's going to be kind of fascinating as well.
Yeah, and I think that teams have probably done a pretty good job just hearing Rosas from here, the main man in charge here, and how they've been like, hey, dude, like, because some of these rookies and youngsters don't have, like I said, a gym in their – they haven't gotten that second contract yet. So they had to get the house. They had to get mama house. They had to get certain stuff, right? But they don't have a gym in their house like some of these elite level stars do, or like you said, a gym built into their house or their backyard or whatever. So yeah, I mean, you can sit there and fill, you know, a bucket of water and do some, you know, stuff with it, like, especially in college, I think too, that'll be an extra one. We've been talking about boxing wise we're gonna find out who was disciplined and who was not real quick, because you got to make weight in boxing. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be kind of interesting. That's a good point, though. And by the way, the NBA did postpone the May draft lottery in the combine, which was supposed to start May 1st. It was supposed to start a couple of days ago. So they're already, you know, and a lot, I mean, the next month to 5 weeks, if you look at some of the new information coming out, the fact that we're opening up in a lot of areas and the case number that they talk about and the average death number on the model right now, like we hit, what was it, 3,000 last yesterday for the first time, I think, 3,100 or something like that. They're saying that that 3,000 might be a number that just sticks for a little bit, which then if you look at cases going up, like per day, that's where it's going to get tricky. And this whole thing is like a, we really don't know a ton about this stuff, man. It's, we sure. think we know. We think we can do this. We think we can do that. And sometimes we can. It'll be just fine. Other times, not so much. Okay. So we got about 15, 20 minutes left. Let's break down some of this stuff here on The Last Dance. Like I said, I've had a tremendous time just watching this thing. You know, I lived it there. No, I was not a reporter. No, I wasn't doing a podcast at that time. But when you're old like me, you lived it. So there are some things that they're failing to mention, or I think they've pretty much, you know, shit on Isaiah Thomas to an extent where I just don't think it's – I don't think they're being straight up with that. But, you know, I mean, did you really think that it was going to be a tell-all? You know, I like how they got into gambling, but they did just kind of spread it out. It is kind of funky that there wasn't a ton of investigation done on certain gambling debts and whatnot and characters. You know, he said, well, I was playing golf with someone I didn't even know. I don't believe that, to be honest with you. I don't believe you're just playing a random golf with these dudes. It's not like you're playing with the CEO of some huge company or something like that. I think you kind of know who's who and what's what. And we'll get into this as they address why did he quit after this last year that they were talking about, the three-peat. We'll get into that next week too, because there is some conspiracies of that as far as was there a suspension or he was going to get suspended. But they didn't suspend him. And, you know, Andre Agassi got popped for cocaine and they didn't suspend him. They didn't even tell anybody back in the day. And, you know, I'd have to say that Jordan Agassi was a youngster selling a lot of, you know, gear and being, you know, helping the sport popularity wise, but obviously nothing compared to Jordan. But the one thing I'll say about the gambling thing, I'm glad they brought it up. And that's why you wonder, man, you were so competitive. How the hell could you have quit? That's what throws me off. And they're going to, obviously he's going to detail a little bit more, but some of the gambling, like they say, well, he wasn't doing anything wrong. Well, hold on now. You can't gamble on a bus legally. You can't. It's illegal. You can't gamble at home for money. Technically. I mean, if we're being honest, technically you're breaking the law, whether it's a dollar or a thousands of dollars, you are actually breaking the law in the hotel. You know, if you're not in Vegas in the hotel, you are breaking the law, technically. I worked at a brewery where years ago, people on the corners of the bar would shoot dice or play cards or whatever, and they had somebody bust them. Like, it's actually against the law, and it still is today. So that whole thing of, well, he wasn't doing anything wrong was like, well, I mean, technically, yeah, you are breaking laws, but I get it. A couple of quotes off the gambling thing. It's been pretty funny. Like, he's like, well, I haven't had to sell all my stuff and sell my house. It's like, well, dude, you can have a problem without having to sell your house. I mean, you're making $35 million a year. I don't think you're going to sell your house like that kind of problem. But I haven't divorced my family or anything like that. But another line that I loved was, how much you want to bet I can stop gambling? That was a Jordan quote. It's like, I mean, it's kind of in right there, you know. So I like how they're breaching the gambling, and I like it showing his competitive nature and just gambling on tossing quarters and how that security guard gave him the, you know, that shit was funny. But I'm glad that they're at least getting to some of the gambling stuff, you know, and that Atlantic City being down 2-0 thing. I'm glad they brought that up.
Yeah, it is. You know, Jordan's going to obviously kind of have the last say. I know the documentary focuses on the 98 Bulls team, but I mean, there's no way he would give all his time into this and like have his mom and dad appear in it and brothers and sisters if they're going to, you know, completely trash him. No, you know, I mean, they're obviously not going to hammer him. I think they're maybe, I don't think they're completely kissing his ass. I think they're maybe hinting at stuff, but yeah, overall, I don't think Jordan's going to green light, you know, hey, you blew this, 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 and this. And they did mention him being subpoenaed on one deal where he admitted to the gambling. And I think there was another big trial as well. I'm not sure if they'll get to that. But yeah, the gambling thing, obviously, it was a big thing for him, you know, but he also has the money to make up for it. You know, just like there's, I want to say, I'm pretty sure.
You can still have a problem, though.
Sure.
Just because you're loaded doesn't mean you don't have a problem.
Absolutely. Like, Phil Mickelson, like huge, huge gambler, you know, that dude loves to gamble, but he's also making, you know, he's winning $15 million a year on PGA tours. So you can lose a shitload of money gambling and still, you know, have it affect your like life. But just cause you're a little bit more rich than other people, you know, then you can, yeah, I completely agree. You can have an issue and, you know, just cause you're rich kind of cover up and make up for it. You know, if me or you go to Vegas this weekend and open up a credit line and blow 50K, I'm going to be struggling for a long time because I just blew $50,000 then, and that's barely what I make in a year, you know? So it puts things in perspective.
Yeah, it does.
For a couple of my favorite lines, and I actually just, I sent the video to my friends. I actually recorded it on myself when I sent out the video. One of my favorite moments was they were showing the Jordan shot over the Cleveland Cavaliers where he did like the in the air kind of double clutch fucking in the air for 5 second sideline jumper and just drilled it. But I love it before because, you know, they say the Cavaliers had just scored. Trey Elo got a bucket. The Cavaliers are up 1 point with like 3.2 seconds to go. And then they give you this nice little breakdown where they're like, okay, so Jordan's like, Bulls centers like, all right, obviously Jordan's getting the ball. Right. And it shows the Cavaliers of Ron Harper saying, coach, I want Jordan. And the Cavaliers coach is like, sorry, nope, put Elo on him. And
then Jordan's putting Craig Elo on him. He's like,
and Jordan's confident alpha ass is like, dude, when I saw Elo, I knew that was a mistake. And he said that straight face, you know, Craig Elo's watching that shit. Harper. He's thinking,
nothing but arms. Nah, I wouldn't want him on there. Put Elo on him.
And so then my favorite part of that episode was Ron Harper's response was, well, fuck this bullshit.
Right, exactly.
You want to talk about true authentic answers, and then what happens? Jordan catches the ball, does the pump fake on Elo, or does the double pump, and hits the shot. You know, Ron Harper had just be shaking his damn head like, hey, I told the coach. Coach said nope. And when Jordan said, dude, I knew this was gold, it's like the only people who I think could do a documentary like this is Jordan, and if you had the Tiger Woods run, I don't think the kids who are younger than us, Chris, truly understand just like there's not really another dude like him. And again, you could maybe say you could think that Jordan is the most.
Let's not forget about Floyd Mayweather too. He had a nice little 20-year run as well.
You're right. You're for Bach. You're right. So there's only so few people in this world, and you might think they're the most arrogant a-holes around, or it's just how they are. But the amount of times Jordan in this video just said, you know what? I like when he got compared to Clyde Drexler, he's like, that was some bullshit. Like they thought me and Clyde were the top two players in the NBA. And he's like, that dude couldn't even be on the court with me. So it was my goal to go out and embarrass him. And again, besides probably Tiger, Jordan and Mayweather, not many people can say that and do it and back it up 100%. I'll get to my other favorite story. Then I'll save a few points for later. My other part I loved was Rodman. So the dude walks into Phil's office and says, I need a vacation. So it shows you a great angle, Chris, of where they have Rodman, Pippen, Jordan, and Phil all doing the side-to-side comments. And Phil called Jordan, and he was like, Dennis needs to talk to you. And then Jordan gives you that shit grin of, anytime Dennis had to talk to me, I knew it was bad. And so anyways, Rodman demands a 48-hour vacation. And Jordan's like, what the hell? If anyone deserves a vacation, it's got to be me on the team. Why the hell is Dennis got to go? So they negotiate a time. Anyways, Rodman comes back from his Vegas bender with Carmen Electra. And then I bust it up. So they have the Indian drill, where if you've ever been on a sport team, I'm sure you've done this drill. You get in a team line, and you start jogging around a field, a court, or an athletic facility. And as the coach blows the whistle, the person in the back line has to catch the person in the front. So obviously, for the most part, when you did this as a team growing up or do it now, the person in front maintains a pretty slow pace, because if the person in front is a track star and takes off, the person from the back is never going to catch them. You're going to do this shit forever. So Jordan tells all the boys that, hey, Rodman's coming back from a two-day bender. Like, let's go really slow. And then they say as Rodman blew the whistle, Chris, it took them 4.5 laps to catch him. He took off like a damn sprinter.
Right. He's like, no, I'm gonna make him work.
So Rodman, and that to wrap this up, that was one of the parts that I truly respect about Rodman. Was Jordan said, you know what? The dude was different. You know, he had a different mindset than all of us. But you know what? When we needed him on the court, that dude was a freaking gamer, and he didn't mess up. Like, he was this different kind of dude. But if you needed the boards, rebounds, or a guy that's going to bust his ass when it was needed, he was that guy. And, you know, a lot of people who are our age now probably think of Rodman as, you know, oh, this is crazy that goes to North Korea or whatever. But during his time, I mean, the best rebounder ever, a huge part of the team. But I love the Rodman story, man. That was classic. For demand vacation, the Indian run, that had me busting up, Chris.
Well, and this is 2 weeks ago, but while we're on that, before we hit up 5 and 6 from
sure.
The other, that I like those ones a lot too. First of all, the soundtrack to this has been money. You know, that like when young Jordan was out there, they had LL Cool J and that song Bad. They had Prince. They've had, like, last night, Black Sheep, like Nas. They started, like, the soundtrack is so fitting. But speaking of Rodman, you know, he had the 7 games where he had 20 rebounds and no points.
Freaking
he had 7 games like that. And the only guy close to him was Marcus Camby. He had 2 of those. We talk about Marcus Camby a lot for our UMass stuff for our college basketball. But 20 rebounds with no points. He had 7 different of those games. And he was a huge difference maker, though. It's crazy. You talked about that Cavs rivalry and that Cavs game, you know, a game winner in game 5 and all that. They were 0-6 against the Cavs before that series and before they started winning games against them. Michael Jordan had missed a key free throw, so they didn't win, the series before. And nowadays, he'd have been getting destroyed on Twitter for missing a free throw or 0-6 against this team or, you know, that whole Celtics run when they couldn't even win a game off the Celtics, even though he went for 63 and they would have called him selfish and all that type of stuff. But I did like how they got to Phil Jackson as well in the Tex Winter and how they slowly got him in there. That was pretty cool. And the whole Detroit Pistons thing I thought was great. You know, I'm glad that they covered the no handshake thing. But once again, I still think they covered it half-assed because although they did cover, the Celtics doing that to the Pistons, they say, well, Kevin McHale handshaked at least. No, Isaiah stopped him and grabbed him, and then they handshaked. He was walking off the court during the game. The guy was at the free throw line, and they walked off the court on the court, not just on the sideline. Literally during a game, the game was going on. It was a live game, and they walked off the court. So I liked how – and another thing they missed on Lambeer said, let's do them how Boston did us. And they walked off the court. They got swept. So I understand the poor sport part of that, but you do have to go with everything when it comes to that. You can't just leave out some stuff. And Boston, first of all, Boston was a rough and tumble team, much like the Pistons. I mean, you could see McHale clothesline Worthy. Like, there was plenty of rough and tumble stuff. And even when they talked about the Knicks, which we'll get into in a second, there was plenty of rough stuff that gets into it. Another thing is the amount of disrespect before the game was even done. They were up 3-0. The Pistons, you know, they didn't just get old. Sure, that they, you know, later in that year, Isaiah Thomas did fuck up his wrist and miss like 40 games. So he wasn't maybe 100% or whatever. But the game before that, I mean, some of the quotes from Jordan, the Pistons, this is before they won the game to win the series. The Pistons are an undeserving champions. The Bad Boys are bad for basketball. So they sat there and dumped on them up 3-0. So to act like, kind of like the whole Karl Malone thing, well, Wilbon forgot to talk about the fucking stitches, the 40 stitches that Malone gave to Isaiah. So, and like I said earlier, it is kind of funny how you have a couple of people that kept losing to them in the playoffs, and that's who hated them. You know, so to sit there and disrespect the team that they weren't worthy champions, even though they had repeated, and there was only two teams before them that had repeated, the Lakers and the Celtics. They were the third team. So I thought that was pretty disrespectful to kind of forget about that stuff, and also to not have them on the Dream Team. I mean, just in that finals that they said that they had won, you know, the conference finals and the finals, you know, on a sprained ankle, Isaiah goes for 25. Some other games, huge games, 25 points, 24 assists, 10 rebounds, only two turnovers, 30 points, 20 assists on 14 of 20 shooting, 23 points, 25 assists, 47, 17 assists. I mean, these, most of those I mentioned were playoff games. And I love John Stockton. But to have him out of the All-Star, come on, dude. And as it turns out, they kind of got pissed at each other during those scrimmages. And they, I remember this from the All-Star game, or I mean from the Dream Team scrimmages, that scrimmage that they had was some of the best basketball you're ever going to see. And just to kind of bring it in here, so I thought they did a good job on the Pistons, but I thought they kind of fell short. I'm not saying Isaiah Thomas's excuse was legit 100%. That's cool. I can see why Michael still thinks, whatever. And he says, you know, Magic and then Isaiah for point guard. So he gives them his respect. But I think that they forgot about how much disrespect Michael and the Bulls were giving them before the season was even over. But that was fun to see the Dream Team clips, because NBA ran a documentary and some of those clips were from there. But that would have been phenomenal just to watch like 10 or 12 of the best players at that time besides Isaiah just go at it. And what they did to Kukoc was hilarious too, and I like how he bounced back in that next game too.
Yeah, that Kukoc, I mean, as the kids say nowadays, like, that dude's cold. Like, to, I mean, you go into an Olympic game and you're being guarded by Jordan and Pippen. And they're like, you know, our goal is, like, make him, like, want to quit basketball. And it's like, holy shit. And that dude, he was like, I had a bad day, like anyone else would, but I came back. And then he ends up on the damn team. To wrap up from 2 weeks ago, maybe it's just the fact I've watched hockey, but that not shaking hands, that's bullshit. Because Jordan did say, hey, they beat us, we shook their hands. And, I mean, I know in hockey, whenever you lose, you shake hands. I know they're different sports, but I think that, I mean, even if you did talk
shit. And you also think the Celtics was bullshit for doing that too then, right?
Oh, complete, yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah.
That's what I mean.
No, yeah.
Because they act like they've never seen it before. That was my problem.
Oh.
Whereas Jordan did shake their hands when he lost to him, no doubt. Sure. No doubt.
Yeah, and because I think his quote was, man, he's like, you know what? That pissed me off because I shook their hands the 2 years prior. You know, so I think that's really petty. And again, you can be a massive gamer and love to win and hate to lose. But I did think not shaking hands was some stupid shit.
It's
but
petty.
Yeah,
you think it's petty to disrespect the Pistons' run too? He said they weren't deserving champs the night before the game of a up 3-0. Isn't that petty too?
True. Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. And I mean, Jordan was the guy that he wanted to make bulletin board comments. And also he remembered him, because after he hit the shot over Elo, his quote, and I won't say this completely, but he was like, go home, MF people. Because all the people, the news writers in Cleveland said the Bulls are going home before the game. So probably not a good idea to piss off Jordan. So after he hit that bomb, you know, he said some very inappropriate words, and Wilbon actually says it unedited in the show. I'm a little bit surprised ESPN can get away with that. I mean, I enjoy it, but I'm not quite sure.
They have to pay fines.
Oh,
that's all you've ever had to do it. The only thing is, you lose your sponsors on some networks if you did it, but they're not losing sponsors. Oh. It's actually easier to cuss on air on television than it is radio.
Oh, true. Well, I suppose that makes sense. And to go through the Last night's shows, five and six. Again, I like that we're again moving a little bit even towards more basketball clips. Like, again, I know that obviously they win, but I kind of enjoy seeing like these, you know, the Barkley Jordan was just awesome. Like, to hear Barkley say, you know, hey, this is, I thought I've never played someone who I realized was better than me. You know, Barkley always thought he was like the his own personal GOAT. And he's like, dude, I ran into Jordan and Jordan didn't let us lose. And it's funny because in game two of the finals, like Barkley carried his team to the finals and, you know, they kind of went back and forth. They're like, Barkley said, my team can't lose, but then Jordan does it. And I really thought it was, and I forgot this. I remember I've always heard the thing, Chris, that Paxson's three, but you know, so in the big game, in game six in Phoenix, the Bulls are are down two with like 10 seconds to go. So again, they go to Cartwright, I think, and they're like, well, so everyone knew the ball was going to Jordan, and Jordan throws it in, gets it back in like the backcourt near the free throw line, and starts to dribble. And before he gets to half court, I think Kevin Johnson was on him. He passes the ball, and you can see the whole defense kind of go like, oh, shit. Like, I think he passed it to Pippen, who was at the top of the three-point line, and every help defense completely collapsed. Like, the guy guarding Pippen almost fell down. And then Pippen drives down to the basket. So, of course, help defense comes up. They swing the ball over to Paxson for a three after a pass from Grant. And, I mean, the dude just busted it. But if, you know, almost every shot they've shown in the documentary, Chris, has been Jordan hitting a game shot. So I'm not sure if he maybe was trying to mix it up. Maybe he just saw the teammate open. But it really is just crazy that for all the love Jordan gets and deserves, that for that game, he makes a pass and the defense was just screwed. I mean, who the hell would have saw that coming, brother? I mean, I actually watched like three or four times because I'm like, wow, Jordan passed the ball. And now a dude had a wide open three and there was one within 10, almost five damn yards of him, man.
Yeah, and also there's games in these series, not just finals or whatever, but where Pippen, two out of the five, six games, Pippen was the man, you know?
Oh, sure.
Or Steve Kerr or Paxton or B.J. Armstrong before him. There were – or Craig Hodges. There were times where someone would just go off and it wasn't Jordan. He was like the all-purpose guy. But, yeah, that was interesting. I definitely remember that game. And he was so wide open. He was just like, oh, dude, it's – Paxton's money from that. That's his shit, though. He'll hit that, you know? Definitely.
Well, let me give you my last point, then I'll let you wrap up the last dance. So I think the part that really continued to sink into me again from last night, it's been the LeBron-Jordan debate. And it's just this video reminded me of how it's really not a debate. Okay, maybe if there was like an Olympic competition for who's a better true athlete, I mean, LeBron's obviously probably stronger just because he's built like more of a football player. But when you see all these, whether it was the Jordan drop in 66 after the golf course comments or doing all these moments, like the dude just never really, if someone called him out, it was like, okay, you called me out, I'm going to beat you on the court and embarrass you. And he always did. So for people to even mention the LeBron thing, and I love LeBron, I'm not a hater at all, but LeBron had the NBA Finals series against Dallas where he wasn't himself. Who knows what the reason was, but for that one series, LeBron really let his team down and was almost passive aggressive in a game where his team was in the NBA Finals. That never happened for Jordan.
Got to the finals though, Marshall, but what about the 7 years before? They already went over some of his failures though, if we're being honest. He got over the hump with that team, yeah. But
true.
You know, we can't forget about that part. They were 0-6 against the Cavs. They never won a Celtics game, period. Just because they had a better team. But I like the example because it wasn't that they had the better team at that time. Dallas. Right.
Yeah, but for people to really have the argument, and again, love LeBron, I just don't see how you can have it. Because, I mean, and LeBron's had his moments, but just there's so many just games where he just scores effortlessly. And it just reminds you of like, holy shit, that dude was really freaking good. Sorry, this is my last point. It's crazy as you
said. How many last points are you going to have here? All right,
I'm done.
We're getting to a buck 10 here.
All right, just how physical the game is, as you said. I mean, James Harden would, if he was doing this dance and shit nowadays, he'd be getting hacked and fouled, and there'd be no little dancing around. The physicality of how the game has changed, and now we have something called a flagrant one, which we've seen probably 35 flagrant ones in this documentary, Chris. Talk about such a physical league. Holy God. But, yeah, I'm done. I'm loving this doc, though.
Yeah, me too. And when I – like, even the LeBron stuff, it blends. It's a variety of different stuff. If you look at the talented teams that he's had to go against in the finals comparatively, you know, Barkley was a monster, but you can't tell me – I love KJ, you know, no doubt. But I wouldn't put KJ in the ranks of some other point guards or guards he had to go against. I mean, some of the toughest team – I mean, what is the best team? And then we'll get into that as well. We're not going to get to that right now. But what is the best team he went against? You know, is it that Pacers club that we're going to find more about, you know, that they're probably going to talk about the last four episodes? Was it that Pacers club that they got pushed seven games? Was it that Utah club? You know, it's tough to say. And that's the only thing. He did go his run and their run. And that's what we're going to talk about next, though, week two, the Houston Rockets, 94-95, and how they'd measure up. The only thing is, they did expand the league by six teams in that time frame. And that did water down some of the talent. It did, because every team had to give up two players. Like, remember that whole thing where they just won a championship and Mahorn found out in the locker room that he's going to the Timberwolves? It's like, what the fuck is this? Why would you even tell me that right now? But anyway, yeah, I don't think that there's no argument to be had, though. But as a scorer, I've never argued as a scorer. Just straight up, if you need a bucket, no one's better than Jordan. I'll take that to my death. But as a basketball player coming into the league, remember, Bron came into the league as a guy who could get his guys involved right away. That took Michael quite a long time. But here we are talking about this. We're going to have that discussion. We can't do that. It's too late in the show. But just a little highlights. The Laker boy thing, talking about, oh, he shoots too much. That was pretty funny, talking about Kobe at the All-Star game, the Laker boy, that little Laker boy and stuff like that. R.I.P. Kobe, obviously. But that was pretty funny. And, yes. You know, because he used to be a volume shooter when he came in the league. That was pretty funny. I liked how he wore the Jordan 1s at MSG. He said his feet were bleeding, but he couldn't take them off. Another example of the soundtrack. Episode 5 opens with Nas. Then they had a special ed, I Got It Made, for those who know that. That kind of birthed the whole air part of it. But his feet were bleeding. That was hilarious. I did like how, just to flash back, how they knew they had to bulk up and get more physical with the Pistons and how they had to get over that top. It was kind of shaky, though, and people don't talk about it. But look how much bigger Jordan got in just one off season. I'm not alleging anything. He's not an actual player, but let's be honest, what the hell? But between Prince and Kumo D and Beastie Boys, and the soundtrack has just been disgusting. It's been awesome. But couple of the Bulls Blazers first game, like you said, 35.6 threes in that game. That famous shrug that everybody uses, even the guy that beat him. That was pretty dope to watch that. The whole Dream Team segment, that was cool with the Kukoc. Now, the Reebok thing, it was really funny how he worried about, like, nowadays, if LeBron said, well, I can't have the Reebok logo showing, so I can't be on the stand with it, I'm going to put a flag on it, he would definitely get shit on for that because, well, putting corporate America first is messed up. Just look at that China stuff. He got destroyed for that on a level that's another thing, too, the amount of press people, but also Twitter. Like, when he says, I don't like people talking bad about me, I got sick of it, he wouldn't be able to handle Twitter. He'd have about 9 different – and same with Barkley. He'd have, like, 9 different burner accounts. Based off Twitter, he would get destroyed on Twitter because that's not, you know, you are your celebrity Mike. But also, some people got riled up last night about the political thing and how he said Republicans buy shoes too, and that's a fair statement. But when you look at that race, don't look at it as the first black senator or whatever. Look at it as Jesse Helms. And that even bugged me back then, because Jesse Helms is known for some really ignorant, not only things he said, but actually he put in action. And to not go against Helms in North Carolina, there's just no, you don't have to be Ali to go against Helms. You know what I mean? Like, this guy was a degenerate, an ignorant degenerate. So, yeah, it's really not much to ask for pumping up this guy a little bit. I thought that was good how they did that. But that also showed you celebrity MJ, but also corporate MJ to not – nobody – Nike didn't call him and say, hey, don't have that Reebok shit. He thought of that himself. So that I liked how they showed that. I did forget on his last season that the Georgia Dome, that they had 62,000 people in the Georgia Dome. I had forgotten that. Another thing that's kind of funny, you saw this in baseball a lot. I remember with the Twins, the locker room, you were able to drink beer right after the game and sit there, and they had a cooler, and they'd get drunk on a Friday night or a Saturday night. And it was pretty funny to see them, you know, at the card games and all that, but having a nice cold beer when it's over. And it's just how different that is. I'm going to have a beer or two, then I'm going to talk to the press and how different that was. The Jordan Rules, that book, that asshole dude who I thought didn't necessarily, you know, was on the up and up, that Sam Smith dude. But then to blame it all, and this is another thing, to blame it all on Horace Grant, and that's it. Even B.J. Armstrong's like, nah, it wasn't all him. But that was pretty crazy. That 93-3-peat with the Knicks down 2-0, he was 3 of 13. Then he had a horrible second half in those games, and that's when that whole Atlantic City gambling thing popped up on him. So he started to get a little bit of, you know, of that stuff. But Oak Tree and Starks and Ewing and Xavier McDaniel, that was fun. I thought I could have sworn it was 1-1 and the Knicks got up 2-1. But I forgot they got up 2-0 like that. So like I said, I liked how they did start to cover some of this. The Phoenix thing with Barkley was pretty nuts. If you look at Barkley, that series, 27 points, 13 boards, and 5 assists. Draymond always talks about Barkley once in a while, and for good reason, but Draymond and Barkley aren't the same player, obviously. But Michael Jordan, that 92, that year where he had becoming the first player to win a league MVP, finals MVP, and won a gold medal. That was freaking nuts, dude. And that is when he took that extra step of stardom, and I could see how it was very stressful. The only guy to ever do that in 1 year, well, we know his name, LeBron James. So I've, you know, I complain about some of this stuff, but it's all in good fun, but I've loved this. The soundtrack, the highlight reels, and like you said, just the way they've captured the physicality, they've captured the game stuff. Like I said, I do love that when they broke that down. I cannot wait to see that Pacers, because a lot of people thought that Indiana Pacers squad was going to be in Mark Jackson. I forgot about the Knicks too, but a lot of them thought that was going to be the series that last in the Last Dance season, that was going to be it, in what Utah was giving them as well. But I will say Seattle and Kemp and Shrimp, Detlef Shrimp and Payton. I will say though, comparatively, like Pippen's one of the best second guy out there. And Rodman, you just the best defender of all time, or one of the best defenders of all time. And you could play small ball with them. So I don't know. That whole LeBron, this has just put a bunch of gasoline on LeBron, because in the you know, Jordan LeBron debate, because you do see like Jordan matched up with some guys like Danny Ainge and shit like that now, where you're like, dude, LeBron would destroy that guy. Like, and I'll say this, one-on-one, you can't talk me out of this just because of size. One-on-one, I'll take LeBron if they have a one-on-one game. Just because he's bigger, you're not going to be able to post him up. And no, he's technically a better outside shooter than Jordan ever was. But true, that also goes with where the landscape's changed since he's been in. And he realized, like everybody else, that they have to be able to shoot the three to an extent. But one-on-one, just playing, I got LeBron all day. But yeah, it's been phenomenal. We got to shut this thing down. Why don't you get us out of here, sir? We'll be back next Monday, though, for sure, regardless.
Again, as always, stay safe, stay inside. If you're going to venture out, go to the park, get in a run. The boys are out. Have a great, great week. Enjoy this basketball documentary. Peace.